personal affection, and also by objective evidence. So this describes the psychology of the appreciator, the follower of Prabhupada. And someone might say, "Oh, this isn't about Prabhupada then." But it is. When you study and appreciate, or by studying how we appreciate him, it's another way of appreciating Prabhupada. Just like with the Supreme Lord, by appreciating his devotee, you appreciate him. So, as far as our intense loyalty and feelings for Prabhupada, they're very wonderful and characteristic of a follower of Prabhupada. They attest to his greatness. But somebody could challenge us and say, "Oh, your glorification of Prabhupada, it's because of your love for him only, and it's not an objective thing." So what we want to demonstrate, therefore, is that having love and loyalty for a great soul goes harmoniously with an objective assessment of his position. If we can establish that, that will help us to see what a strong position a Prabhupada follower has. This topic in this course was suggested to me by a verse and purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's like a sutra to the whole talk, or the whole talk is just an elaboration of this. It comes in the Daksha Yajna, Srimad Bhagavatam, when Lord Shiva's wife Sati returned to the arena of sacrifice after Lord Shiva had been insulted, and she addressed Daksha and the assembly there. Prabhupada says, "Since Sati was chaste and the wife of Lord Shiva, it was her duty to establish the elevated position of Lord Shiva, not only by sentiment, but by facts. Here, Lord Shiva is praised by Sati, partially due to her personal respect for Lord Shiva, since he is her husband, and partially due to his exalted position, which exceeds that of ordinary living entities, even Lord Brahma." And she figured that since she was talking to a learned Brahmana, Daksha, that he would accept the sound logic and her glorification of Lord Shiva. I remember when reading that, I was always very struck by it, something very appealing about her position like that. Because when you speak out of love, it comes from the heart, and you know your subject. But at the same time, she knew the objective glories of Lord Shiva. And so it was a very strong presentation. Our presentation should be like that of Prabhupada. So, first, going to the objective assessment for a while, we need that. Reminds us a little of how we were discussing philosophy the other day. We said philosophy is for the atheists, and the gopis just love Krishna. We need it for preaching and for ourselves. We need to be objective people. And certainly it will be necessary to make an objective presentation about Prabhupada in order to convince a skeptical person by reason and logic that Prabhupada or any pure devotee of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God Himself, is great, and to demonstrate to those people that our attachment is not merely sentimental. There's a lecture Prabhupada gave before a very big audience outdoors at New Vrindavan when he gave Bhagavad Dharma discourses. And he was very aware of the situation. There was even reporters there from the New York Times. that he was aware that it was Vyas Pooj and everyone was making homages and bowing down, and he started right out saying that you may be wondering why is everybody showing all this praise and to this man. And he went on and on like that, reading into the collective minds there of the non-devotees at least. And then he gave an objective presentation why it wasn't man worship or something like that. And on other occasions, Vyas Pooj's occasions, he's addressed that. So we always proceed with discrimination. That's mentioned in the Bhagavatam purport. One should be qualified enough to discern transcendental potency by discriminating or by fortunate chance, and your path of liberation will be guaranteed. Discriminating doesn't mean it has to be cutting somebody down to size, but it is done with it can be done with rigorous logic and objective evidence. So we have to explain to that neutral or even antagonistic audience why we have such high worship of Prabhupada before his murti, bowing down. People say, oh, there's not supposed to be a murti of a man, only God. Why we do the pooj and all these things. So these main source of objective assessment is from the scripture. And the more we can show that this is scripturally authorized, it shows that it's not our sentiment. I'm going, in a minute or so, I'm going to discuss this word and with some dictionary applications. Sentiment and sentimental has a lot of interesting applications. But one of them I can say now is that it's described as having meaning to a particular sentimental, having meaning and value to a particular group of people. Like I used the word yesterday when I said, yes, 26th Second Avenue has great sentimental value. So that means to the members of ISKCON, they're willing to pay a high price, or they would like to get that place, because to them it has some meaning. But that implies that there's nothing important about the place, particularly. But to them it has meaning. But we would contest that and say that it's not merely that. It actually is an important place, but you don't understand it, why it's important. So the Shastra brings it above that it's just my sentiment. I seem to remember something like from Prabhupada talks. You know, he would talk with his disciples and sometimes ask them to say something, and if they wouldn't say it properly, he'd keep trying to get a better answer. Sometimes he would say something, I go, why do we worship Krishna? And somebody would say something, and Prabhupada would say, oh, that is your sentiment. But what is the proof? Something like that. When a devotee would say something like that. Even if they said something loving about him. Well, because Prabhupada, because it's connected with you, Prabhupada, and therefore we love it. Oh, that's your sentiment. But what is the actual... He would sometimes want it to be brought above that. All right, so now talking a little bit about the fact that our worship and relationship with Prabhupada is not sentimental. I think it's important to spend a few minutes on understanding the word sentimental by dictionaries. Of course, you know, dictionaries give different meanings. They give a first meaning, which is usually they say is like the widest standard applied usage, and then other meanings. So, and they change over the decades too. This is an American dictionary, first Webster's New World, most popular in America. I was surprised that the first meaning was not negative, because I always think of sentimental that way. But it says, having or showing tender or delicate feelings. Well, that's not particularly, there's nothing wrong with that, according to that. But then the second one is really heavy words. Maudlin, mawkish. Those are extremely heavy words for something that is, you know, sickeningly emotionally, really weak, and like a drunkard singing you know, in a bar and crying about his mother or something like that. Some really terrible melody, mawkish, maudlin. But the Oxford English Dictionary had more negative sentiment even. A tendency or view colored with emotion, swayed by feeling rather than by reason, emotional weakness. So sometimes we say like that in a popular usage, we say, well, sentiment is good, we've got to have a sentiment, Vaishnava sentiments, but not sentimental. So when there's emotional weakness, then it would be undesirable. False or unworthy tenderness, or the display of it, nursing of the emotions, and then the value of a thing to a particular person. I remember a definition I was given in college that about sentimental, and it was that if a person being praised is not worthy of the praise, then it's sentimental. It meaning whatever it is, a poem, a painting, an expression, an attitude. Or even if the person is worthy, the expression could be unworthy. And we were given an example, I remember, with some illustrations, like, I think it was two poems, and one was a poem about the death of a great person. I don't know who it was, but maybe Abraham Lincoln or something. So he was great, and his death was a tragedy. But the expression of this was, you know, maudlin or mawkish, you know, too many tears or too many, you know, just the expression was unworthy. And then the second poem was a poem about the death of a chicken, which of course is completely insignificant. But somehow it was presented in a very simple way that, you know, one of God's creatures passed away with very little, you know, indulgence in it, and it actually evoked, it managed to evoke a human feeling that this creature had been died. Yes?
And you read many different definitions of sentimental. But the first one is generally considered the most important?
Yes. Important, yeah, widely used, I would say. Widely used.
But everything else after that would go negative.
Yeah.
So how do we take it? Is it positive or is it negative?
Well, I take it when I look up words like that, that you may hope, like you're hoping a word is going to mean a certain thing. So then if it has that as the first definition, then you can use it with confidence. But you should be aware that after that, a load of, you know, it has these other associations to it. So you're not completely free. Like some words, they won't be like that too much. They'll be different maybe, but not that one will almost contradict another. English isn't like Sanskrit, but where I understand it's like really all kinds of different meanings. But I guess it's a little bit of that dictionaries express the relativity of language in the material world. I was bringing it up, and like what I'm trying to get across is that, and I wish to use it to underline its in the second usages, or the British dictionary, it has all more of the weak usages, and maybe Americans are more sentimental. I don't know, but they upheld it a little. Yes, we're getting into a grammatical discussion. Sentiment, but sentimental may be different. Yeah. Yes.
Sentiment more present.
Yeah, that would be true.
Say a drunk is
really
super.
Right. Sure. Just like anything else, the modes would make it different. But of course, what we're getting to is that there can be misapplied emotion even to Srila Prabhupada. So maybe try to talk about that. And I can ask you also, can you think of any examples of sentimental attachment to Prabhupada? And I mean expressing love and loyalty, but there's something unworthy or weak about it. So if you're confused by the dictionary meanings, you can forget them. And just, can you think of examples of expressions like that? Did he say? The Prabhupada, he didn't use that word. Okay. Yeah.
Decorating the storefronts on 26 Second Avenue, the first.
How was that sentimental?
It was a show of feelings towards the spiritual master.
It was good though, wasn't it? Yeah. All right. Yes.
Danny was once sitting in Prabhupada and somehow he described the Prabhupada and said, Srila Prabhupada, I love you. Prabhupada turned to him and said, that is not sentimental.
That is
not sentimental.
Not sentimental.
He was saying that he was being sentimental, in other words. The expression, the feeling he had for Prabhupada was saying, this is a sentiment.
Oh, he was saying.
Yes.
Oh, yes, our real relationship was not sentimental. Yes. So you shouldn't have just said that.
Yes.
Incident in Hawaii, would that be considered those devotees, they came to Prabhupada and they said, Prabhupada would do anything you want. They didn't want to cooperate with the local authorities, but they came to Srila Prabhupada and said, we love you or something, we'll do anything you say. And then when he said, I want you to do what my GBC said, and they weren't with
him. Yeah, I'd like to go on a little more on that point, and put it in the category. If you don't follow his teachings, but you speak with your lips out of love for him, when that devotee in 1967 was a lot of trouble, Prabhupada said, with his lips he speaks surrender. But actually, following my instructions. So that kind of thing, when there's not actually activity to back it up. I have a little incident on that point. In New York City in 1968, after staying up very late at night, Prabhupada rose and traveled early in the morning to Boston. He then wrote back to his temple president in New York City, who had not been able to rise on the morning of Prabhupada's departure to Boston. Don't just praise me, Prabhupada wrote, but do as I do. So when there's that contradiction that you can speak about Prabhupada, but like Prabhupada says, the kirtan players, they sing about Krishna and they cry in the kirtan, then afterwards they smoke a bidi. We can say they're singing, or they're singing but they want, they're doing it for money. For Krishna, that would be sentimental. So similarly, although there's some sentiment, it's not fully worthy if it's not backed up. Another category of sentimental attachment would be if we praise Prabhupada in a non-parampara way. Even the etiquette and the prayers, everything we do is very standard and parampara. We call it like rasa, in relation to Krishna, it has to have the right rasa. So His Divine Grace, Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Prabhupada Ki. Sometimes devotees put in other things like His Divine Loving Grace. Of course, maybe some people can take a little more sentiment than others, but if you really start getting into it, then even the most tender-hearted person will say, well, this is sentimental. If you say, you know, Prabhupada Ki Jai too many times, or you make up these I can't think of any other word, but these sentimental words, or put in too many words, instead of course you love Prabhupada, and we want to share your expression of love of Prabhupada, we want to get in on it too, but praise him in the standard ways, in parampara. The guru should be praised in parampara. His glories are You know, they're unlimited, and there's so many wonderful words to describe them. But do it in parampara. Mahanidhi Maharaj? Yeah. Oh, I don't want to blaspheme a person, but...
No, I don't mean blaspheme. I mean, was he thinking of a sentimental?
Well, I can think of an incident about him, like here in Vrindavan. One thing he used to like to do is station himself. When Prabhupada was going out for a walk, he would like station himself in the path and say prayers or say things out loud to Prabhupada. But one time he was there, and Prabhupada went by, and he said, "Do something practical." So I think that was kind of like that other remark was made, that this is not sentimental. Yes?
Here, as an example.
Yeah, sure.
With more experience when he died, when he should have brought up with a request, like, could you please grant me the
benediction? Yeah. Yeah.
Like, can you please give me the benediction that I can find a genuine spiritual master?
Yeah, he wanted a blessing. That. Another example is Prabhupada said to a reporter said to Prabhupada, they were talking about bogus gurus, he said, "But you are a good guru." And Prabhupada said, "Why do you say that? Don't be sentimental." So he wanted it based on, why do you say I'm a good guru? There are reasons, what is a good guru, and there's scripture. So even praise, he didn't want to accept that person's praise because it was just a cheap thing, and who knows why he did it. Prabhupada wanted it not to be sentimental. Another example I have, I've heard on tape, a Guru Das once replied to Prabhupada's question, "How do you know you're Krishna conscious?" And he said, "When you feel it." And on that occasion, Prabhupada said, "No, feeling is sentiment." So he wanted something more. Prabhupada wanted solid work. There's an example of some of his lady disciples with good sentiment. They wanted to do a preaching program for Prabhupada, and they went to Jaipur and set it up and then invited him. But they really weren't good enough managers, and they hadn't really made any arrangements. So their Jaipur program for Prabhupada was, it was a sentimental thing in the sense that practical arrangements have to be made to back up the sentiment to serve. Prabhupada didn't want only, and Prabhupada is, as some of you have pointed out, he could be very demanding, and then you would see that you had some sentiment, but he wanted cement, or he wanted, books, and so you had to back it up with some activity. So this is, I think you get the idea of what I mean, although there's some imperfection in it, and there's some relativity about what is good feeling and good sentiment, which there's never enough of. At least we'll admit, maybe some of the examples you could take one way or another on some of the occasions, but we can, unless you don't admit it, you can say you don't agree. But my point is that there certainly is such something like sentimental expressions or attachments, unworthy ones, and we want to make the more worthy ones. Yes?
Is that you mean by spiritual sentiment?
Of course. That would be love. Love for Krishna, love for the spiritual master. And then there's material sentiment, love for your husband or wife. But I'm saying it's not just so black or simplistic that love for husband and wife, that's not good because that's sentimental, it's a false object. Any expression of love for Krishna and Prabhupada is always perfect. Well, in a certain sense, you could say it is, because it's directed toward him, but we've given some examples of times where he considered that not, or though it's towards Krishna and Prabhupada, it should be purified or improved in different ways. Yes, there's spiritual sentiment, and that's what bhakti is. So love and philosophy... the objective assessment is important, but love and loyalty and faith are also needed, like religion and philosophy are combined. So there's a nice expression on the side of sentiment, even if it's imperfect, towards the perfect person. Also, Oh, yeah. This is by Devahuti to Kardama Muni. Not knowing your transcendental situation, I have loved you while remaining attached to the object of the senses. Nonetheless, let the affinity I have developed for you rid me of all fear. So here's a goodness being felt in other words, she loved Kardama with some material feeling, but he's so exalted that counts in her favor. And then he was able to reveal to her the spiritual benefit of a relationship with him. So any attachment to a sadhu is good. That may also be said. So now, let's look a little about on these on the side of these subjective or partial expressions. We want to also defend this, in other words, not sentimentality, but we want to defend things like exclusive feelings for Prabhupada. Yes, we have faith in him more than others. We have loyalty for him. We have all these things that you, outsider, think of as fanatical, but we can explain them why they're not sentimental or unworthy towards this person. So faith is very important. It's not just a dry reason or argument. Prabhupada has defined it somewhere. Faith is trust in something sublime. And in the Bhagavad Gita, this is like a spiritual sentiment. You're saying, are there spiritual sentiments? They're like faith. Those who are not faithful on the path of devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in the material world. Sometimes we hear Prabhupada, especially in some kind of confrontation scene, saying, it's not faith, this isn't faith. But on the other hand, here we see that faith is trust in something sublime. It's necessary for a devotee. Thus, faith is a most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. It is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. Prahlad Maharaj said, my dear friends, if you can place your faith in me, in my words, simply by that faith, you can also understand transcendental knowledge just like me, although you are small children. Unto those great souls who have implicit faith in both the Lord and the spiritual master, all the imports of Vedic knowledge are revealed. And one more, Narada Muni says, I was very much attached to those sages. I was gentle in behavior. In my heart, I had strong faith in them. So, could some of you express some more examples of faith, not only from the Prabhupada stories, that's nice, but also if anyone can explain what it is and what's the importance of faith in Prabhupada. You're not registered. Out. Anyway, I don't mind them so much. Go ahead.
Mark, isn't it that faith is tested by the activities of the disciple? So like in the translation to Guru Puja in the Vaishnava songbook, the very last translation is, may your glories now be proclaimed throughout the three worlds. So if the disciple has great faith in the spiritual master and preaches the glories, and that's a test of faith.
A test of faith. Mm. If he has faith and he preaches the glories. Mm. Yeah, and as expressed in those songs. Yeah, that's good.
Prabhupada writes in the Bhagavad Gita, where real faith is established in the mode of goodness, where actual faith is based upon realization, which means the culmination of the process of sinis of hearing, inquiry and service, and then the reward is illumination, which establishes one's firm faith. So real faith of Prabhupada will come as a result of trying to hear from him, trying to understand what he said, and then acting for him, our realization, and then real faith comes.
In Lord Chaitanya's talks with Sanatana Goswami, he presents the idea of faith being having full confidence that any benefit that comes from any other process is also, or any other means, is readily available. There's one object that I'm paying my full attention to.
Brother. Yeah, that's good. That reminds me of another definition I've heard from Prabhupada, that even in the beginning, before you've accomplished so much spiritually, you think that in this process, I'm sure that I can make all spiritual advancements, so let me proceed with Shraddha. Even in the beginning, you're sure that you can bring it to perfection if you follow. So it's just a great, it's a trust that you, we heard the expression leap of faith. It goes beyond reason. There are, for different reasons, you then go ahead and you believe what this person says. He doesn't have to prove everything at every moment. In fact, he can't. If he says, this will happen in the future, follow me. You do it because you've developed for the different reasons that Kulananda Maharaj and others said. You're willing to go. Prabhupada gives the example, because of the good reputation of the airlines, you buy the ticket. So that's, they're going to go. They're going to make it. So this is required. There are some other, so this, I'm describing some of the feelings of partiality that we have, especially towards Srila Prabhupada, and say, not other gurus or not other persons or authorities, not to the degree we have it for him. And we're examining what the concepts are themselves and how they're worthy. Another one is we are partial to him because he's our chosen guru and founder Acharya, our guide back to Godhead. Not just by policy, that's a little... That's something else. Remember in a couple of occasions like Chaitanya Charitamrita with the followers of Prakasananda and the Tattvavadi followers of Madhva, they both say after their knowledge was exposed as shallow, oh well, we do this because it's a policy, we're his followers. So their loyalty wasn't that deep, it wasn't that, he hadn't really captured them that much, they were following because of some policy. But it has to be a deep personal attachment. And partly, I thought of these, another sentiment in the worthy sense. Yes?
We can get one of your dog brothers to come and teach us as a prophet.
Yeah, very good.
So in that way, we also have exclusive feeling towards prophet as we turn to the West.
Yeah, can't be replaced. Related sentiment is gratitude. How could you not have gratitude for what Prabhupada has done? So in the scriptures, it should be for any guru, any bona fide guru, there's that expression, my guru is Jagat Guru. That feeling that he saved me. Prabhupada said it towards his guru, and so we say it towards Prabhupada. It can also be said in disciplic succession. But the special contribution of Prabhupada evokes so much gratitude. We're even grateful that he gave us our spiritual master in disciplic succession and so many things. The gratitude was expressed by Prahlad Maharaj. Your servant Narada Muni kindly accepted me. My first duty is to serve him. How could I leave his service? I'm so grateful because he saved me from my material desires. So that's an abiding sentiment. And a sentiment like that can keep you from falling down. I don't want to disappoint him. I'm a loyal, grateful follower. Often when a sage gives transcendental knowledge, then in a natural way, the person who receives it expresses that. Prithu Maharaj, he expressed gratitude to the Kumaras. And there's nice scenes of Sanatana Goswami expressing his gratitude to Lord Chaitanya for the knowledge he gave. We discussed... loyalty, they're related, but they have nice different flavors. Gratitude means a feeling of thankfulness. Loyalty implies like the strong bond that has been developed in a very partial way. For this, loyalty really means not loyal to everyone. You can't be loyal to everyone. Prabhupada used to say, everyone's servant means no one's servant. But this, Prabhupada found Acharya in this line, a bond of create, and that's tested. Like loyalty to the country, when somebody wants to challenge or there's some fight, loyalty is shown. Tapan Mishra and Chandrasekhar defended Lord Chaitanya's name against the Mayavadi sannyasis as best they could. And then there's a real strong sentiment of loyalty by somebody who could defend himself, was Balaram. He says, the principal deities of all planets are engaged in his service.
and they consider themselves most fortunate to take the dust of the lotus feet of Krishna on their helmets. This is when the Kurus, they were trying to lure Balaram to come on their side against Krishna. So they said some bad things against Krishna, and his loyalty came out very strong. He's praising Krishna. Great demigods take, like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, and even the goddess of fortune, are simply plenary parts of his spiritual identity. And still you think that he is not fit to use the royal insignia or even sit on the royal throne? Alas, how regrettable it is that these fools consider us, the members of the Yadu dynasty, to be like shoes and themselves like helmets. The loyalty can spring up like that against blasphemy. Like at the Rajasuya sacrifice, Sahadev stood up. Lakshman and Hanuman, always loyal. And so many other examples. So we also have that sentiment of loyalty with Srila Prabhupada. So now, another expression is loving friendship, and so many related ideas. But now I want to go on to another point, since we're developing that mood of the exclusive loyalty we have to Prabhupada. I want to question it. What if in our love and loyalty for Prabhupada we become so exclusive that we lose appreciation for others? So one reply to that is, first of all, we shouldn't think that all exclusive feeling such we have for Prabhupada is a bad thing. Even though it makes us exclusive, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's bad, that we don't love everybody equally, or that we don't think anybody's close to him in greatness. That's not necessarily a bad thing, it's part of love. And here's an example. The devotees of Lord Chaitanya, Anupama and Murari Gupta, they were staunch devotees of Lord Ramachandra. When they were tested in that loyalty and asked to change to the chanting of the names of Krishna, they could not. But Lord Chaitanya honored their attachment to Lord Ramachandra and didn't try to break it, which must have been even more intense, because actually to chant Krishna's name was what he was teaching. But they were teaching Rama's name, but he saw their exclusive loyalty for Rama is not something that I want to smash. Even though he could have referred to the objective proof that Krishna was greater, in their case, he honored it. I said to him, Lord Chaitanya, "All glories to you, Murari Gupta. Your method of worship is very firmly fixed, so much so that even upon my request, your mind did not turn. The servitor must have love and affection for the lotus feet of the Lord exactly like this. Even if the Lord wants separation, a devotee cannot abandon the shelter of his lotus feet." The word Prabhu or Master indicates, and there's a purport by Prabhupada, and he praises this unalloyed devotion by the devotees. Lord Chaitanya congratulated that and exclusive devotion that they had. So it's not necessarily a bad thing. Lord Chaitanya also honored that devotee in South India who was a devotee of Rama, who was in a sad mood because of Sita's being kidnapped. So similarly, about exclusivity, in the spiritual world, the holders of different rasas, they develop loyalty to particular forms of Krishna and particular relationships, sometimes even when they're in conflict with other rasas. Like the boys are playing like anything, and that was in conflict with Mother Yasoda's rasa, that the boys should stop playing and he should come home. And he said, "Come home, you're not a street boy. Like, what is all this playing? Come home and be a good son." And then when he went to leave, the other boy said, "Oh Krishna, if you leave now, we're not going to play with you anymore." And his mother said, "Krishna, come on." You can see they're exclusive in their rasa. And that's more important than arguing as to which rasa is actually higher, is to be fixed in yours. Partiality towards Lord Chaitanya was glorified in the case of Jagannanda Pandit's intolerance, which he demonstrated to Sanatana Goswami when that incident about wearing the turban on the head, which was received from another sannyasi. And when Jagannanda saw this turban on Sanatana's head, and he knew Sanatana was such a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya, he became angry and was going to strike him. So Sanatana then explained why he wore the turban. He said, "Oh, Jagadananda, no one is dearer to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu than you. Your faith fits you quite well. Unless you demonstrate it, though, how could I learn such faith?" He wanted to see the wonderful, ecstatic loyalty. On the other hand, having said that, defended exclusive devotion to Prabhupada, as we honor Prabhupada in an exclusive way, we should also respect the partialities that others show towards their chosen deity or spiritual master, like Lord Chaitanya did about the Rambhaktas. If their leader is at least a God-conscious, acceptable leader, a teacher. So there's a time for both exclusivity as well as a time for broad-mindedness towards others. And to bring this out, I'd like to read from an exchange I had some years ago with Vishwambar Maharaj of Radharaman. He had read in something I'd written, I was quoting Prabhupada, Krishna appeared in the ISKCON, in the womb of ISKCON. Krishna appeared in the womb of ISKCON. So he objected to this and thought that I meant that's the only place that Krishna was. So I said in a letter to him, "By stating that Krishna has appeared within the Krishna Consciousness Movement, or ISKCON, doesn't mean that ISKCON is the exclusive or sole place where Krishna is present. I did not intend to mean that, nor did Srila Prabhupada in his writings. For example, in the holy temple of Radharaman in Vrindavan, Krishna is appearing, and he's also appearing in Vrindavan as Radha Damodar and Krishna Balaram. So my statement was not for exclusive presence of Krishna. Moreover, these kinds of statements are sometimes made in the name of preaching. For example, Krishnadas Kaviraj says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in effect, that if one does not follow Lord Chaitanya, he is a demon. This statement is correct in context. However, Vaishnavas also preach in a broader way. We also sometimes refer to all the Vaishnavas, not just those who are following Lord Chaitanya, as within the family of Vaishnava Sampradaya, the Ramanuja Sampradaya, and others. So sometimes a preacher preaches with greater exclusivity, and sometimes he speaks in a broader context. Lord Chaitanya even criticized the Tattvavadis, who were devotees within the same Sampradaya that Lord Chaitanya appeared in, the Madhva Sampradaya. And yet on another occasion, the followers of Lord Chaitanya will speak highly of all the devotees of the Madhva Sampradaya and Vaishnava Sampradaya. Our spiritual master would sometimes remark that Jesus Christ was our guru, and we also distinguish ourselves from the Christian doctrine. If we were to discuss this very intricately, it becomes a complicated and difficult question. No preacher or thinker wants to be guilty of speaking or writing on a sectarian-based bias. Yet inevitably, when one expresses his particular line of thought, he distinguishes it from other lines of thinking, and that distinction can even be made in very minute areas and differences. We shouldn't be fanatics. We can be very exclusive and very devoted without being like that. Lord Chaitanya honored the follower of Ramanuja, Venkata Bhatta, and yet he established the supremacy of Krishna over Narayan in a friendly spirit. Yes?
Can you give some examples?
That is fanatic? That no one except Prabhupada has ever taught anything at all about God consciousness. In the attempt, I said it because I wanted to praise Prabhupada and express my love, but it was sort of, what to speak of fanatic nowadays implies all kinds of action too. Anyone who's not a follower of Prabhupada should be killed.
Anybody that thought that they could be Krishna conscious outside of ISKCON is living a dream. So we're in a situation now where there are people who take initiation outside of ISKCON, but still they relate or communicate with devotees within ISKCON. So how do we see that letter? How do we take that letter? Especially when sometimes devotees within ISKCON quote that.
Well, it's pretty hard for me to answer that in the presence of so many other learned sannyasis, because it's I would probably only come up with an opinion or something, a provisional reply. You remember we discussed that on a couple occasions here, and some very different definitions and opinions were given as to the position of those people who are practicing Krishna consciousness but not in ISKCON. Some said that they were still Krishna conscious, but they weren't in ISKCON. And others may have said, no, they're not even Krishna conscious. So I myself can give you an answer that would be satisfactory to everybody present. Sorry. Yeah, right. They'll want to debate. Anyone outside of Krishna consciousness or ISKCON says he's following Krishna as an hallucination. And that's a real heavy and statement which is studied carefully and discussed a lot. I can beg off also in terms of trying to cover some subject matter on a specific topic, and it's really not so much exactly on the topic. Or it is on, excuse me, it is on the topic, but I can't handle it. Go ahead.
Is it ever after a caller of Srila Prabhupada, someone who's like Srila Prabhupada, decide, well, now I've done someone better, this Vaishnava is a nice Vaishnava, let me
yeah. No, and that would really be an example. That's the kind of thing you take the pot out, like Jagadananda did, that got the frying pan. When your godbrother says that, because of objective reasons and because of the loyalty that we're all sharing, that Prabhupada is our spiritual master, and someone says, well, I found somebody better. So our reaction is an emotional one. How can you say that? What, are you crazy? So he's not loyal.